welcome to episode 146 of Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. We're glad you're joining us this week. Our goal is to inform, educate, and inspire. We hope that tuning in for our weekly chats will help push you outside of your comfort zone and add some new experiences to your bucket list. We also welcome ideas for topics, so if there's something you'd like to hear more about, please let us know. My name is Lindsay, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander Travel agents Sandy, Donna, Laura, and Elizabeth. And this week, we are also happy to welcome back once again Tia and Dawn from Visit Anchorage and Cole with K2 Aviation.
Yay!
And
we don't have applause track, so we had to make one. Yay!
We're so glad you're here to discuss what has now become one of my new favorite ways to explore a destination, flight seeing. So I'm very, very, very happy to say that I did not pass out from fear or the terrible things I thought was going to happen. I was the skeptic who didn't want to get on the plane. And now I every trip I'm planning for myself, I'm, where's the flight seating? I have to do.
And I can confess to that. I was sitting right next to Lindsay in that plane, and she was looking at me like, I can do this. I can do this. I want to stop in the air. She's like, this is amazing.
So it's such a little plane. You don't, I mean.
Yeah, I was going to say, how little is it? How many people were on the plane with you?
We were on a de Havilland Otter. Vintage. Right. Of course, it doesn't have all the vintage parts, but. and so that's 10 people plus the pilot generally.
Okay.
And it was so smooth, Sandy. I thought it was going to be like, I don't know, somehow in my head, I thought small plane, it was going to be rocky and woo, we're dying, and then we're back, you know, but it wasn't like that at all.
Well, Lindsay, it probably did help that apparently your expectations were way down here.
Yeah, so really?
It's really easy to exceed them. But you're not flying very high in flight seeing, right? About how high do you go when you're doing something like this?
It really depends on the flight. So most of our flight seeing, and it depends on where you're going as well. For our tours, I work with two different companies. So Russ Flying Service is the parent company, and we primarily focus on float planes. So we're going in a lot of different places than what our sister company, K2, goes, because they're focusing on Denali only.
Okay.
And so Denali flights, we're at right around the 6,000 to 8,000 foot of the mountain. We do have a summit flight that gets up to about 18,000 feet.
Oh, wow.
As well. So it depends on what the visitors decide to is going to be the highlight of their trip. And then as far as our planes down here, we can fly at the 5,000, 3,000 foot level, depending on where we're going. If we're just taking a short flight, maybe out to a remote lodge, and landing on a remote lake, if it's only 45 minutes, we might fly at a lower altitude.
Is landing on the water terrifying the first time? Because I think that would be so scary.
I will tell you that it's my absolute favorite thing to do in Alaska.
Really?
Alaska has over 3 million lakes. And so there's something about the landing. You get out and you're expecting it to be bouncy, and it's so smooth. It blows my mind every time. And the pilots are so skilled. A lot of them have grown up here or been flying here for 20 years. And they know all these secret little spots to take you. It's pretty amazing. So I would not say terrifying. First time I went, I didn't know what to expect, and I was just blown away by it.
Same with me. Like, the first time I went on a float plane, I was really nervous, and I was quite a young child too. So, and then we did it, and I was like, oh my gosh, I don't even know what I was afraid of. So I think a lot of people that don't do it, it's because of their fear, but if they could just get past that, they will have the time of their life.
And that's the same with our ski planes. So when we're doing Denali, the highlight is the glacier landing, of course. And so we take off on wheels from the airport, and then we lower the skis and land on a glacier. And people are a little nervous about that at first, but they're surprised at how smooth it actually is.
So I want to ask a very, very basic beginner question, because I know the answer to this, but I want to hear your answer to it, because I think the rest of our podcast, we're going to talk about some of these amazing things that you can see from the air. But for you know, say we have somebody walk in and say, okay, I'm already spending all this money to go to Alaska. Why would I spend a little bit more to get up in the air? If I can see that big old mountain from the ground, why do I need to get up in the air? So what's your like elevator speed for why it's so important to do?
Well, you know, we talked earlier, or the last podcast, we talked about how big Alaska is, and people don't realize how few roads we have. And to be able to really get out, people have this mental vision of what Alaska is, what they want to see, and they know there's going to be mountains, and they know there's going to be wildlife, but they get to Anchorage, and they see Costco, and and it's a big city, and they say, oh, wow, and they see the mountains surrounding it, and they say, I want to go there, and they can get into a plane, and within 30 minutes, be out in this wilderness with no one else around, and it looks like you can reach out and touch the mountains, even though you're two miles away. It's absolutely just breathtaking, and you'll see people are able to really relax, especially when we do one of those landings on a glacier or on a remote lake. There's something that happens to the guests, to our visitors. You'll see the shoulders drop and their eyes widens and their breaths are a little bit deeper. Here they are in this remote place. And you know, 2 hours ago, they were in the city. It's really amazing. It's just incredible.
Wow. How loud are the planes? So if you take your whole family, and can you actually hear yourself talk to your other family members, or is it too loud?
That's a really great question. For our flights, every guest gets a window seat and every guest gets a headset. So we have two-way radios to communicate with the pilot and the fellow passengers. So whereas you can still hear the plane, you're really hearing the pilot's commentary. So our pilots aren't just flying you. They're also telling you about what you're seeing. And so, and then you're able to talk to your son and daughter or your husband and say, wow, this is incredible. So that's really a part of the tour.
So what's the best side of the plane to be on? Be on the left or the right?
Well, the pilots, again, are there to give a tour. So if they see something interesting, they're actually going to turn to make sure both sides get to see it.
When I was up there, I didn't do a plane. I did a helicopter tour. And one of the things that just blew me away was, you know, we were flying past these mountains and the pilot would say, oh, look at the goats on the mountain. And I couldn't see them. They were tiny little dots, you know, like I didn't realize that I wasn't a lot closer. You know, I felt like it wasn't that far away until I realized that there were goats out there. And then he said, that we were going like 100 miles an hour. And that just totally blew me away that we were going that fast and that it didn't feel like it. It's just, everything's so immense. It's hard to fathom, really, you know, it's really cool.
One of the coolest things was seeing the hikers or the climbers, seeing the, you know, I got them to see them for like a second, but to see that, to see where base camp is, that was really neat. It was just, I just had my face in the window with my tongue hanging out the whole time. So I was so afraid my battery's going to die and I was going to not be able to take pictures, but it's just so beautiful. And I think that stepping out onto that glacier, that's a feeling I've never had in anything I've ever done in my whole life. I thought I'd done some pretty cool things, but to stand there and just be the reality set in of you're looking around and there's nothing, you are on the glacier. It's a really cool thing.
Yeah, it really is. We quite often hear this was an experience of a lifetime, and that's really an amazing thing for a tour company to be able to give to their visitors. Our pilots are also out there taking photos. I get photos every week from our pilots that say, check what I saw this week. Everyone's really passionate about it. And you know, you talked about the first time you went.
Yeah.
You came up with tears in your eyes, right?
Right. I looked like every other, like I said, lived here my entire life. And the first time I landed on Denali was in 2008. And I literally was crying. And the people on the plane were doing the same thing I was. And I'm like, this is incredible because you're standing in the shadow of the tallest peak in North America and you're standing on a glacier and it's just an incredible feeling. And even for someone that's seen that mountain my entire life, in the winter, I see it almost every day on my way to work. And just to be standing there in that beauty and quiet, it's just really undescribable. And for people, I mean, I always tell people it's a must do. If you have the budget and you have the time, it's a must do.
It's kind of like the awe of the Grand Canyon. It's that same type of, you know, just incredible beauty. You know, you've seen it in pictures your whole life. You know, but the awe of the nature, you know, and being in that nature is not something that you can translate to any picture or movie or IMAX film. You know, just
that's a really great way to describe it. You know, we people will go into Denali and take the bus tour into the park, which is an amazing trip. But to get up on the mountain and stand on the glacier, there's a connection that happens with the national park, with the mountain. And that's why it's a highlight for them. They come back and they're just lost for words for a lot of them. It's really a cool thing.
I couldn't imagine going and not doing it. I mean, I think I would cut other things out of my budget to make sure that I could do that. That's how impressive it is. And tell us about your the video that...
So with K2 Aviation, we decided that we wanted to be able to offer something for our guests to take back with them to share the experience. You talked about the photos not really doing it justice. And so we've equipped all of our aircraft with HD cameras. And so we film every flight for our scenic, and these are not the summit flights. That gets a little too cold up there for our cameras, but our free flights with the glacier landings. We can record the flight. At the end, they can purchase it, and we can send it to them. So when you're going over to the neighbors to see their, you know, their slideshow, you'll get to see a video of the actual flight. And the images are amazing. The video is high quality. It's HD, and you do get a sense of what they've experienced. It's not quite the same, but it does give you a sense. And it's allowed us to show the videos in the office, so people always want to know about the weather. What's the weather doing up there? Will I see the mountains? And we're able to show a video of what the conditions are up there for that day. So people are getting almost real time, or they'll know exactly what they're going to see when they purchase the flight and go up.
So it's really cool that it's their flight, too, because it's not like a canned video where they're like, oh, I'm not sure I didn't see that. They're like, I remember when we flew like this, and then the pilot came around, and he was pointing out this, and then the sun started, you know, they remember their exact journey, and that's really cool.
It's really exactly. A cool thing. And we do edit them. We cut them down a little bit to do more of the highlights, because with the plane, we do get a little bit of a there's a couple pieces we can't use for the video, so we'll just cut those out, and it'll be their highlights of their tour. And we do have a blanket video as well. So if someone goes and they loved it, they buy their video, but a lot of times they'll also get the Bluebird Sky video if it wasn't a perfect day for their flight.
Oh. Now, if they're in Anchorage, are the flights taking off from Anchorage to go to Denali, or are they in Denali and basically going up the mountain?
That's a great question. So out of Anchorage, we do offer Denali flights. We offer two Denali flights, and there are a couple other companies that offer Denali flights as well. We have one that's via float plane that's going to do a mountain tour, and it'll land on a remote lake after, but it's not a remote lake, generally not a remote lake on Denali. It's usually on the outskirts of Denali. It's pilot's choice depending on the day. And then the other flight, we do a glacier landing out of Anchorage, but we have one very small aircraft, so that's a four-person maximum for the glacier landing out of Anchorage. Our sister company, so that's with Russ Flying Service, our sister company, K2 Aviation, we offer glacier landings all day, every day, and have multiple departures. And so that's about 2 hours north of Anchorage as far as drive, and then a lot of tour companies will stop there. You can also take the train from Anchorage to Talkeetna or down from Fairbanks and Denali.
And that was also a really good question, because when you mentioned, do they take off out of Anchorage or Denali? Actually in Denali proper, it's actually easier to get to Denali from the south side, from Talkeetna, where you're only 60 miles from the peak, than it is from inside, like, the Denali Park entrance area. So that's always also a little bit of a misconception, I believe. So maybe you can touch on that.
Yeah, you know, a lot of folks will say, well, I'm in Denali, why not go there? I mean, there are some great flight seeing companies. We always say, flight see wherever you can flight see. We'd love to have you, but if you're not going to be in Talkeetna or have time in Anchorage, definitely do it out of Denali. But it is a little bit of a further flight. You're also seeing the north side of the mountain from there, which is spectacular, but it has less glaciers and less valleys. Out of Talkeetna, we've dubbed it the Star Wars effect, where you're going through these really amazing glacier carved valleys and the parts where it looks like you can touch the mountain. I just think it's really spectacular from that side.
It really is a different aspect, and the mountains look much more jagged, and the peaks are so much more magnificent looking from the south than they are from the north. And the north is where you see the pictures from, like, Wonder Lake. I'm sure you've all seen those. If you take a park tour in on a bus and you go inside the park, you're actually looking at the mountain from the north side. When you fly in from Talkeetna, you're actually seeing it from the south side, and you get to see also some of the other major peaks there that are all in the top, you know, peaks of top 25 highest peaks in North America, Mount Hunter, Mount Foraker. You're going to see a lot of different mountains from there. So in my opinion, flying in from the south side is better.
Yeah. You said they land on the lake. Do they deplane, or do they just stay on sitting in the plane on the lake?
No, that's a great question. Nearly always they will deplane. So it always depends on conditions, and the pilots will always try to choose a lake. We have over 3 million. Choose a lake that that allows the guests to go to the shore. We had a spot this year that was absolutely tremendous, but when they got to the shore, their Arctic terns had nested there. And so we had a couple of guests that were actually dive-bombed by the mama and papa.
Oh, wow.
Bird. So it was a true Alaskan experience. So they'll get out. They don't have to wade through the water. The pilot will maneuver and they'll crawl out onto the, I shouldn't say crawl out. They'll step out onto the float and then make their way to shore. And they'll get to spend about, same with their glacier, about 15 minutes. And it doesn't seem like a lot of time, but when you're out in the middle of the wilderness, it really is enough time. They get some great photos and then they're back on their flight for the rest of the scenic view. So, you know, we talked about Denali, there's so few roads. There's so many places to see. And out of Anchorage, we'll fly to Prince William Sound and go over to the glaciers. We often see whales from the water or adult porpoise.
Wow.
Fly over the glaciers. So you'll do the day cruise and see the glacier from the front, the tidewater glaciers that go down into the water. But then to fly over it and to see how massive they are and how far they go back is really a cool connection for those folks that have done both. We fly just a quick flight out of Anchorage, less than 30 minutes into the mountains, and you're going over to the Kinnick Glacier, or we're trying to climb across the Cook Inlet to the Triumvirate Glacier, where there's some volcanoes. Again, another really amazing spot. And then, of course, our number one in the month of July and throughout the summer is bear viewing, getting people out to see bears in their natural habitat, feeding on the salmon, or digging for clams in Chinitna Bay. That's a true highlight for folks. So they get that scenic flight seeing tour on the way out, and then they land and they meet their guide, or they're in a national park and they're going to follow the trail system and view those bears. So that's another big highlight.
And when did you say a good month to do that was?
July.
You know, we've got them all summer long, so we don't guarantee bears, but we have scheduled our tours so that the bears are most active at the times we go. So we tour that offered all summer. That's our Chinitna Bay, because the bears aren't following a salmon run like they are in the other locations. So they're feeding off of sedge grasses and digging for clams, and they do fish. But it's a late run salmon run that comes through there. But this year we've had people see 20, 30 bears at a time at that location. And we offer that all summer long. That's our newest tour. We're super excited about it.
Got to do that in, was it May? It was in the end of May, yeah. Early June. It was right after you were here, Lindsay. And I got to fly out to Chinitna Bay, and we saw it just in one field alone, there were 17 bears.
Wow.
And they weren't like right in front, right, really close to us, but they were close enough for me. You know, it's just amazing to see them out there. We saw, sows with, multiple cubs, some two and three cubs. We saw boars. We saw a boar actually kind of chase, like go towards a cow and her cub. Sow and her cubs, and they actually chased kind of up. The mama chased the bears up the mountainside, and then came back and kind of scared the boar away. I mean, it was just really interesting to see them in their own natural environment. And then we actually went down the beach a little ways further. We saw a bear much closer, and then on our way back towards the end of the tour, a bear crossed right in front of our vehicle that they drive us in, and it went down onto the beach and started digging clams. I mean, the whole experience was incredible, and I had heard Cole talking about it because last year was the first year that they operated that. And of course, with all the travel we do in promotion of Alaska, I had heard her talk about this tour so many times. And actually, all my daughters work for Cole, work at Russ, and so they had done it. And I'm like, I just want to do it so much. Anyway, so I was actually fammed out there and got to go on this trip, and it's incredible, and it's incredible that you can see bears from all the way from May through September. You know, I think that is a really great tour opportunity. Of course, a lot of people have the bears and the waterfall, you know, that picture in their mind. If that's what they have, then they probably want to do the Brooks Falls if they book it far enough in advance. My other daughter just got to go to Brooks Falls 2 days ago. Thanks, Cole. And she said it was absolutely phenomenal. And I said, you have no idea how lucky you are to get to do some of these things. But, of course, they sell those tours, so it's nice to have them go out and do them.
Yeah.
But, again, that's that quintessential picture of a bear fishing for fish in the waterfalls, Brooks Falls. But that's only a particular time of year. So.
That's offered in July for us. And we're the one of the only companies, actually the only company out of Anchorage, that flies direct down to Katmai a lot of them, you'll do a flight to King Sam and then over to Katmai National Park. So it's a 2.5 to 3 hour flight one way. And then you get out to the park. And that's our only unguided tour. That's done in the national park. You get a safety briefing from the ranger upon arrival. And there's rangers stationed throughout. And there's two main platforms that the bears are viewed from. And so when you've seen that on National Geographic or, you know, that's one of those networks. That's the place that you're watching is Brooks Falls and Katmai.
That's where the fish are like flying up the falls.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Awesome.
And I was able to do that tour with Russ Flying Service a couple years ago too. And again, being a kid that grew up in Alaska, you know, we really don't see bears out in the wild like everyone thinks we do. And but once you go there, and like she said, you get your safety briefing, and then they're like, it's 1 mile little, you know, hike to the platform where you get to see the falls, and you're literally walking on this path, and bears are walking all around you. You're like,
oh my gosh.
Hey bear, oh bear, you know, I mean, it is truly amazing. And then you get to that platform and watch them fish. It just,
well, yep,
you get just taken away. You
and
know?
There's
and
how so they, like, many fish.
How many fish and how the, you can see how, who's in charge, what bears, you know, the master of it, who shoos them away. And then when they catch them, they'll go and eat them right underneath you. And you're just like, it's unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah, and the bears are really there to eat the fish. So, like, when they come walking by you on the trail, like, they just tell they you really, to step off the trail and let the bear walk past you. And I just think in my mind, like, yeah, right, that's what I'm going to do, step off the trail and let the bear walk past me. But they literally just walk right past you. They're eating so many fish, and they're that's all they're there for. And, like, you are no bother to them.
That's their whole goal when they're out of hibernation is to put on as much fat as they can before they go away for the winter.
Right. And they have the rangers along the path, so you're always safe. And like you said, once they get done eating, we had one big mama bear come and actually lay right on the trail. And they're like... Interesting. Wow. You have to stay at least 50 feet away from her. So she decided to go to sleep because she just ate all that salmon. Who was like, okay, let's reroute everyone. Definitely sleepy.
Yes, yes.
It's incredible. Absolutely incredible.
It really is. And then we do a couple tours by boat. And so Chinitna Bay is done by foot and four-wheel drive vehicle on a beach. And that's our only one right there in the ocean. And then we work out with Lake Clark National Park with Crescent Lake and Redoubt Mountain Lodge. And so that's a guided experience via boat. And Lake Clark National Park is just incredible. It's one of the prettiest places you'll ever go. And that's just an hour and 15 minute or hour and a half flight out of Anchorage. And so you land, you meet your guide, and you're going along Crescent Lake. It's this beautiful turquoise lake that you land on. You have a lodge prepared lunch in the middle of the day, and then you go back out for bear viewing again. And that's a totally different experience, but equally as amazing. And so we offer that after Katmai ends. That starts on August 1st and goes till the end of September.
And you can book the remote lodges to stay there too at the cabins?
Yeah, you can. Yep. So we service a lot of the remote lodges as well. Luxury, high-end luxury lodges. And then, a lot of the bear viewing lodges, which most of them are luxury lodges as well.
So are the lodges like, are they like you have a room in a lodge, or is it like you have a little cabin, or how are those set up?
Yeah. A little bit different. And some have both. Some will have like a little inn or main house that'll have some rooms. And then they'll have a number of cabins off of it. And I'd say majority of them have kind of that style. And then it's usually a dining room where you'll have your breakfast and your dinner. And a lot of them will offer a multi opportunities for activities. So there's fishing, there's kayaking, there's hiking, there's of course, bear viewing out of a lot of them. And so it just depends. And some we fly to even in the winter for Iditarod season, where you'll see the dogs come through. There's some cool stuff like that as well.
Are you still connected? I mean, do they have phones and internet and all those things?
Yeah, you know, technology has been good to us for these remote locations. have satellite phones. Some of them are so close to Anchorage, even though they're remote, that they actually get some cell service. And so... there are days where we have a hard time. Even in the summertime with Chinitna Bay, we will have some days where it's very difficult to hear them on the phone. We'll have to break out the sat phones. Their cell phone or main line doesn't work, and to communicate that way to get our weather briefing.
Wow.
That's so cool. But we can around. We fly in the winter both to Denali and then out of Anchorage. Out of Anchorage, we do a Denali flight and then a short flight, scene flight, and then a lot of service to those lodges, just to get them prepped for the season or to send out their food for visitors coming in the winter.
I'm kind of an Alaska junkie. I've been in love with it since I was a little girl and watched every documentary on Iditarod. when the announcement comes up about the teams that are entering and how you can bid on being part of a sled team or volunteering. I want to know all the dogs' names. And, I'm the way, about parts of Alaska and about the Inuit, like some people are about their football teams. It's such a beautiful place, and it brings me alive. And now I work from home a lot, so there's a reality TV show all about Alaska.
There's a lot of appeal,
though. One of the ladies talks about them. She lives out in the middle of nowhere, and she has to have her fuel brought in, and they come in, and she's got to go out and clean the runway to make sure there's a runway for them,
we actually fly a lot of private people up to their private cabins, and we'll fly the material. They get a new couch. We're taking the seats out of our Otter and loading that couch up and taking it out there.
Wow.
And we do fuel. We do fly fuel up to some of them as well. Yeah. So that's pretty accurate. You mentioned Iditarod. We do a special tour on the Monday after the official start called Chase the Race, and we fly out to one of the checkpoints to where you spend the whole day out there, and we do a big cookout, and you see the dogs come through. You get to see the mushers actually caring for the dogs and feeding them. You can talk to them, take photos. It's really a cool experience.
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen during our podcast that I've got a couple of dogs, and one of them has had two knee surgeries. And his vet and the vet's wife were both vets that have been flown up there several times to be vets during the Iditarod. So it's an incredible, just that the whole history behind that and the way that it ties the country together and is so much a part of the culture of that state is, to me, it's just fascinating. It's, and the folks that do it who, cold as snot and it's long hours.
So we should probably tell people when they could see the Iditarod.
So the ceremonial start of the Iditarod is always the very first Saturday in March, always, every year, very first Saturday in March in Anchorage is the ceremonial start. And there's a lot of winter tours that are tied in with that. So you can come a few days before that. You usually want to get tickets to the Mushers Banquet so you can see what numbers they draw as far as when they're going to start, what number position they start the race in. And that's all luck of the draw. They literally pull a piece of paper out of a hat, and that's the number that they get to start. And they put just the number the same as the number of mushers there are. And then the official start the next day is out of Willow, which is just north of Anchorage. So they do the ceremonial start. They do about 11-mile run with the dogs. And then they put them back in their trucks and out to Willow, which is a little ways north, just past Wasilla. And that's where they do the restart the next day. And then from there, it's about an eight-day race.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it always starts again the first Saturday of March, and it's a really great time to visit Alaska because by then we have quite a bit of daylight. Truthfully, by mid-February, we have more average daylight than anywhere else in the lower 48. So it's a great time to come up to go skiing, snowmobiling. Really, there's just so much to do at that time of year, and the temperatures have gotten quite a bit warmer. So we're up in the mid-20s pretty much almost every day, right around the 20s to, low 30s. So
that's not warm.
We're in the southeast, most of us. So
you also do expeditions for hunting and fishing.
We do hunting and fishing. At Anchorage, we'll do guided fishing, where we work with a couple of remote lodges. We also do unguided fishing, where people bring their own material, and we own a couple cabins we'll drop them off at. There's a boat for their use. And so we can really cater to everyone as far as fishing goes. Hunting is a little bit different. We don't have any hunting, guided hunting that we actually sell. But if we have hunters that call us and say, hey, we want to go out here, we have our permits, of course. It's not that easy to necessarily just come up and hunt. They have to apply and sometimes win a lottery type thing for certain species. And so they tell us where they want to go, and they give us the coordinates, and we can take them there. Then absolutely, we can do that both out of Anchorage and out of Talkeetna. More often, we're doing it out of Talkeetna these days, the old hunting grounds that we used to go to. The caribou aren't there anymore, or there's less moose population.
So I have a question for you. There are so many different flight seeing opportunities that you have. If you pick just one.
So that is a difficult question.
because we do have a lot of people that will say, you know what, I'm going to do a Denali flight, and then I want to go bear viewing. So that's quite common that people will do both of those things.
So you can connect.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We even do custom trips for some folks where they want to fly up to Talkeetna from Anchorage after their bear viewing tour or after their lodge stay. And we can coordinate that because we have the two companies that are sister companies. So we can do a lot of custom things as well. We have family groups to do custom things all the time with us. But as far as choosing one, you know, that's changed over the years. But my favorite one right now, outside of bear viewing, because I think getting into those remote national parks is really important and super special. But we offer a tour out of Talkeetna. That's our only float plane tour where we'll land on a remote lake on Denali. And you'll do a guided hike. It's about a four-hour experience. And I should say guided walk or hike. We call it a hike, but it goes at a mellow pace. It is off-trail, but people are really amazed because they think they're going to land where it's a lot of ice and snow. And it's actually heather-covered hills and a really gradual incline. But you can take this hike and get to a spot where you can see the peak of Denali. We're only about 15 miles from the peak of it. And you can see a glacier winding up. It's just absolutely incredible. There's a creek running down the it's that true, oh my gosh, I'm in Alaska, I'm in the wilderness. And you have this guy that lives there all summer long in a tent. He's got a camp there, and he walks down and meets the float plane. And people get really excited about that. And then you end it with a glass of wine.
I'd be excited about that.
Cheers. before heading back to Talkeetna. So, you'll get a sightseeing tour of the mountain on that tour as well.
I have a logistics question, because one of the most common questions we get, and again, most of us on this podcast are in the Southeast. So people coming from here are like, how many jackets do I need to pack? And, you know, we tell them about Anchorage being fairly mild, but if you're going to go on one of these flight scene tours and you talked about how cold it was up on the, do they need to bring something special for that? Or do you provide, jackets? What should they pack?
Not at all. You know, if they're coming in and maybe in March we start doing our glacier landings, we do encourage maybe some warmer layers at that point. But most people are going to have an outer shell, a hoodie or sweatshirt. It's not uncommon in the summer to get really warm because that sun bounces off that glacier. And so we'll have people up there in t-shirts. That's actually really common. So we say dress in layers, just like you would tell anyone coming to Alaska. They don't need anything special. We do provide overboots. That will go over their shoes. So we say, you know, long pants are recommended, close coat comfortable shoes like sneakers or hiking boots, and then put the overboots over it to keep the bottom of their pants dry in case it's a little slushy. Sometimes the sun can melt the top of the glacier a little bit and make it a little slushy up there. So, no, nothing special.
And Lindsay, you can attest to this when we landed on the glacier, how hot it was up there.
Well, I personally, I was a little chilly, but I think it was so exciting that I didn't feel the cold, you know. But one of the ladies in our group did a snow angel.
Wow. And put her shoes on. You're walking around in her bare feet.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's about 15 minutes as well. And so then you're back in the aircraft. Yeah.
I think your adrenaline's going because it's such a unique experience that I don't think you feel, you know. I brought my gloves and stuff, but I don't think I really needed them. It wasn't.
And we do encourage a lot more because our planes, while they're heated, they're drafty. I talked about these vintage aircraft and there's some air circulation that gets in there. So we do say, you know, dress for the outdoors and people wearing hats, gloves, and usually a parka or warm coat. Because once we get in the wintertime, it gets high up on the mountain and we no longer do the glacier landing because of how cold it is. So that's a different, yes, in wintertime, dress in a lot more layers, more clothes.
So I do have one more kind of logistical question about weather, because it is very unpredictable. And what is your, let's say, if I have a family that just absolutely has to see the lady and she's just not showing herself, what are the logistics of that? Do you offer a comeback program? Do you offer?
Yeah, so we make it very simple. Our goal is to show you the mountain and make sure it's a highlight of your vacation. And so I'm really proud to work for a company that, you know, we're making a living off of it, but we want it to be the best experience. And so we watch the weather all the time. And so it might be cloudy in Anchorage, or people might be coming from Denali and it might be rainy and cloudy there, but the mountain could still be showing and we could fly up there and it's bluebird sky. But we watch very closely and it's not uncommon for us to cancel, due to weather. We don't think it's going to be a quality tour experience. if that does occur, we tell people to call in as it gets close to their flight. Sometimes we don't know until they arrive at the office because we're watching and the weather can change within a matter of minutes for Denali. But we always give three options. They can reschedule for later in the day or the next morning or the next day if it's in the, or a few days if they're coming back through. They can, take a shorter tour, something maybe they didn't purchase originally, but we'll say, this is what we are offering and this is what you will see. And, sometimes it's not Denali. Sometimes it's a lower glacier tour of Denali. Sometimes it's down the Chugach Range. We'll fly down south and see a different experience. And we'll refund the difference if there is any in that cost. Or if they don't have time in their schedule, they don't want to do the lesser flight, we just give 100% refund right there. So if they paid their agent, we're going to go ahead and let the agent know that we're refunding this. They won't be charged. It'll refund as a card that we have on file.
Okay. Perfect. So if it's something that's really important to you, it almost behooves you to have a little extra play in your schedule.
That's a great comment. If you have someone that's arriving to Talkeetna and or Anchorage and they're going to be there for a couple of days, book their flight seeing tour right away, like as soon as they get there, because that'll give them more options to do it later that day if the weather clears or to go the next day or make sure we're stopping in that location twice. Out of Anchorage, we do a lot of times are able to offer another tour that's equally as amazing. Even with our bear viewing tours, we're able to kind of interchange some of those. But and most people say, yes, I'm here now. I don't have extra time. I'm going to take this other tour. But it's a flat-out cancellation. We do our best to try to reschedule. So if there's some flexibility and that's a highlight, worth leaving in there.
Do you guys do anything around the Northern Lights?
I was going to ask that same question.
For flight seeing?
Yeah.
Flight seeing or with visitor Anchorage. You know, people think they have to go all the way to Norway or, you know, to see the Northern Lights. And I've heard that Alaska is a really good place to...
Alaska is an incredible place to see the Northern Lights. And part of that is just because of the sheer size of the state. You can actually get to areas that are very landlocked. And so they're not as close to the water where you're going to get that cloud cover coming in off the water. Obviously, interior Alaska, Fairbanks, you can see like incredible Northern Lights. If you're there for 3 nights, you're darn near guaranteed to see the Northern Lights. We actually have some incredible Northern Lights viewing here in Anchorage. And that same photographer that we spoke about that does the photo tour, she actually does a Aurora photo tour, and it's incredible. And Talkeetna, there's the Aurora lady in Talkeetna that does incredible walking tours in the evening where you can be out watching the Northern Lights. So
is there a time of year that's better for that?
Well, March is my favorite time of the year, period, for anyone looking to come up here in the winter, partially because the temperatures are better, the daylight hours are great, and the Northern Lights tend to be really good at that time of year as well.
So it has to be winter or dark.
Yes, dark. It has to be dark. Mm-hmm. Northern Lights season is August 24th through April 24th, basically.
But March is the best time because you can tie in the Iditarod. You get up to Fairbanks. There's the International Ice Carving Championships, which is incredible. And then you can tie in the Northern Lights viewing.
I would say if you have someone coming here in the winter, they definitely want to tie Fairbanks and Anchorage together because there's – you know, in one place, there may not be as much to do for like an entire week. But if you hit Alyeska Ski Resort down here in Anchorage area and then do the Iditarod and also go up to Fairbanks and see the Northern Lights, you're going to have a really great winter tour. So,
and you can rent a train up from Anchorage to Fairbanks on the weekends and then midweek in March.
So another question was, that I was thinking was one of our last podcasts we talked about, well, it was kind of around Airbnb, but it was like, how do we take good care of the places we're visiting? So how do we respect and nurture and, you know, it's like if folks are coming to Alaska, what are, you know, it's like one of the things Elizabeth said was, you know, leave only footprints, take only pictures kind of thing. What are the things I'm sure, you know, that you guys really value about how can we help folks who are coming be good stewards of this state that is so beautiful?
Well, you know, I can speak on our company and things that we do. We're members of Green Star Alaska and the Adventure Green Association. And so those are to get involved in those, we have to offer a recycling program. We do certain things to use less fuel. We with our guided hike, and our glacier, we make sure that we're cleaning up, that there's no waste left behind. The guided hike, we never take the same trail twice. So we really help our guests in that. We make recycling really easy for them. Our guides are guiding them through the process when they're out in those locations. And I think most tour companies handle it that way, to where they're making those types of things available.
Absolutely. Adventure Green Alaska is a fairly new program within the last couple of years. And, that's done through the Alaska Travel Industry Association, how you get certified for that program. And it really is fantastic. And they're starting to get a lot more companies up here that are actually doing that. And there's certain things that they have to meet in order to become certified. But that, and again, the recycling programs and things like that. And in the national parks, of course, they have, you know, they have signs and stuff to keep our parks clean and those type of things. So,
and a lot of like we have some small water bottles for sale, but we actually have set up, a lot of locations have just a refillable water station, encouraging people to use, you know, the same water bottle the whole time they're in Alaska. Those kind of things.
Our tap water in Alaska is incredibly good and clean.
I can imagine.
In Anchorage, our water actually comes from Eklutna Lake, which is Eklutna Glacier. So our actual tap water in Anchorage comes from a glacier. So.
And it comes out cold. That's one thing that people always say. I have family from Florida. They come up, and every time they come, I love the water here. It comes out cold.
Well, Florida water is terrible anyway. So. It's terrible.
And are there, like, local craftsmen? You know, I know that every area of the world has, like, the tchotchke places where you can, you know, buy little stuffed huskies or whatever. But, you know, are there local craftsmen and ways to support some of the cultural centers? Or
yeah, well, we have a couple different programs in Alaska that help you distinguish where these items are from. One of them is called the Made in Alaska program, and it shows a white polar bear. There's a white polar bear sticker on the item that's being sold, and that simply tells you that item was made in Alaska. Now, if it was made by an Alaskan native in Alaska, there's a Silver Hand program, and so if you see the Silver Hand sticker, that actually means that it was made by an Alaskan native in Alaska. So those are really distinguishing programs. And then the Anchorage Market and Festival, like Tia was talking about, downtown on Saturdays and Sundays, a really great place to go see that, as well as the Native Heritage Center. They have a beautiful gift shop. Actually, the Anchorage Native Health Center, the hospital in Anchorage, has a really incredible gift shop that's kind of a hidden gem. We didn't take you there. Sorry, Lindsay.
Next time.
I'll be back. It's on the list for me.
A lot of open air markets. Like Talkeetna has their local artists that meet every weekend, and they have a little, you can go buy from the artist right there. So we have a number of galleries downtown and a lot of communities that are very art focused. And so you'll always find those. Of course, you'll find those other stores with the tchotchkes, and the t-shirts. But we do have a lot of local artists.
Well, that's really good. So it's the Silver Hand means it was made by a native of Alaska, and the polar bear means it was made in Alaska.
Correct.
Okay. That's a really great tip for folks who may be going there.
Right, and that's also included on our Anchorage Wild Expert training that you can do online. So for travel agents, if you want to just brush up on your Anchorage information, head online and Anchorage Wild Expert travel trade training.
Well, that is our show for this week. Thank you again so much, Dawn, Tia, and Cole, for joining us. We welcome your comments and feedback on this episode or any episode, really. So to leave comments, please visit us at outlandertravel.com and then click podcast at the top of the page and find the episode you wish to comment on, or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpodcast, or just search for Fly Away. And please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. On behalf of Sandy, Elizabeth, Laura, Donna, and myself, Lindsay, thank you for joining us here at Outlander Travel, and we'll see you next week. Gotta fly.